Welcome to Starfield Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us for a talkcast every Thursday night starting 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either download on the phone, it's dialed 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions, and the call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the TalkShoe website at www.talkshoe.com and search for call ID 17702. And remember to use the Chrome browser, unfortunately. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall at gmail.com. If you need to reach me via Skype, my Skype ID is FranzGames, FranzGames. And, of course, you can follow me on the Twitters. I have the podcast account, which is SFUOnCall. That's SFUONCALL. And my personal account, which is Paul Franz, PaulFranz. And just to find me, you can go to twitter.com/PaulFranz. And, of course, this lovely talkcast gets turned to a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some, I'd say some quick news from ADB, but ADB didn't post up any quick news. I know they have been working hard on Capsule number 53 and just announced this week the new Starfire Tournament Series. And hopefully this will help to improve the tournaments and encourage people to join up, to sign up. I know Gene has been busy managing the Facebook page and, of course, uploading ships to Shapeways, also managing the Twitter feed. And I know she's had some minor issues with getting things posted on Facebook last week, and that's all resolved, fortunately. And, of course, Steve Petrick has been working on SFB updates, and I'm sure he's continued to work on the Gorn Master Starship book, if not also, I think, previous weeks he has been working on the Tholian Master Starship book. Moving on onward and forward to the SFB Online tournaments, as I mentioned before, the tournaments are currently on hold. Well, actually, I mentioned last week the tournament's on hold, but we do have a new tournament format. It's called the Sapphire Tournament Series. Now, I will be talking about that later on in the podcast and going through some of the details so that listen in and you'll get to hear more about it. I'm not sure, well, I know Steve Cole might stop by. If he does, that'd be fantastic because then we could discuss it even more. And if you need to know more about it, also you can go to the discussion board at starfleetgames.com/discuss, or just go to starfleetgames.com, go to the homepage, and there's a discuss button right there. That's probably going to be the easiest way. And of course, when it comes to the library report for this week, there has been actually no progress on it. I did do processing of some ships, but those ships were just fixes for the current ships that were already there. Lord knows there are some errors, and it's good to see that those are hopped on and fixed ASAP. So the current library progress is that the completed conversions are 2,481, yet to be converted to 849. And that leaves a percentage complete of 74.5%. And with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, it's the one, the only Paul Franz, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, we have me, we have Barry, we have Dave. It's awesome to see more people here with me. I don't feel so alone in the world, this cruel world. Not quite that bad, but,
yeah,
you know, crazy world out there. So tonight, this is actually the last night of all the tournament tactics talk because, for a little bit, because we've gone through an overview of the different ships from ISC to Romulans, Ryans, Klingons, Federation, the whole lot. The last one is the Winds. Now, obviously, when it comes to the Winds, there are two different kinds. As Barry was pointing out, before the show started. Obviously, the number one is the Black Shark, which limited options when it comes to option mounts. But overall, it is a solid ship. It's basically considered one of the most average ships out there. You know, if you don't play well, take the Black Shark. You can't go wrong.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have great turn mode. If I recall correctly, it's turn mode of C, which is...
That's correct.
Which is, you know, is not the absolute best, but it's not the absolute worst. Now,
Continuing
on to talking about the Black Shark, obviously, the two option mounts. You only have three things you can put in those option mounts. You can either decide to put a Phaser 1,
mm-hmm.
or you can put a drone rack, a bay rack, or you can decide to put in an ad rack. That's your options. That's it. Now,
I forgot about the ad rack. Nobody uses that.
Yes, I agree. It's very seldom. But depends upon the person. You know, the ad rack can be... The thing is, the ad rack is a much maligned weapon in my mind. Just because of... Yes, it's limited usefulness because there's only two things it can hit. Number one, it can hit drones. Number two, it can hit...
Shuttles,
exactly. That is it. Mm-hmm. And when you hit it with an ad rack, you have to roll a D6 to find out, okay, how much damage did it actually do?
Mm-hmm.
But the great thing about an ad rack is it's one of the few weapons in the game where you can fire it multiple times in a single turn.
I won't need to see that.
Especially if you're fighting against the drone racks. I think whether it's drone racks or shuttles, I think both of them can. I don't think it's limited to drones. Correct? Yeah.
What do you mean? You can't put drones in it.
Yes, you can. You can put dogfight drones. In that rack.
Oh, you can put a pair of them in there.
Yep. Now, when it comes to the win, unlike the Klingon, it does not include any.
Oh, okay. So it's...
And unfortunately, the problem with the win is that you can't put them in there for one reason. You don't have any drone points.
Yeah.
Only the Klingon.
That's basically 12.
And the Zeni get... drone points.
Yeah.
Points to upgrade your drones.
Right.
I want to make that explicit because some people might get a little confused by the term. But that's the great thing about the ad rack is it can fire every single impulse.
Until it runs out of ammo.
Until it runs out of ammo, of course. But 12 shots.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I'll tell you the truth, other than the fact that it has a very high fire rate, on average, it probably can take out all the drones in a single B rack.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Agreed.
But of course the reality is that you can empty it much quicker. And if that B-Rack has any large drones, that's where it's really nice. You can blab the drones and say, hey, there's a large one.
Oh, yeah. That's definitely the beauty of ad racks. And just Russ is just reminding us that ad racks can also fire on fighters, which is a great benefit because of
you can fire on what? Oh, yeah, fighters.
Fighters.
Yes.
With two hits of the ad rack on a fighter, it can be either at least crippled, if not destroyed.
Correct.
Now, here's the tough part about that. Anyway, let me just mention this real quick, which is that to get to that point, you have to get range two. If you get range two of Hydran fighters, it's kind of pointless at that point because they've already fired their weapons at you.
Well, yes and no.
Yeah, understood that you can take them out for later, so you don't have to worry about them again. But at the same time,
Well, the fighters typically try to go closer than range. Well, if you take it out at range two, it's a simultaneous fire.
Right.
Or if you can hang at range three for a couple of impulses.
Mm-hmm.
And if the fighter is using boost packs, babies are terrifying.
Yeah. Well, booster packs, which are double damage. If you have them active, if I recall correctly, if you turn them off, you don't get double damage.
Right. Right. But you can't turn them on. How often can you turn them on and off?
Yeah. That's one thing I'd have to double check on fighters because it's been a long time since I've played with fighters with war booster packs. Because I forget if you can turn them off or you have to drop them. Because I know with the PFs, you can turn them on and off.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not so sure about the fighters.
Right. In PFs, I think you turn them on and off in energy allocation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they manifest as extra energy points, not as extra speed.
Yep. So, was there anything else that you want to mention that I cut you off before?
I'm always working at an angle, what can I say?
Okay, obviously not. There's the obvious different configurations considered, the standard configurations. You have the Klingon configuration. The Klingon configuration is mainly considered putting the phasers in both sides.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the Zinni configuration, which is having drone racks in both sides.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you really think about it, a Klingon, in my mind, truly would be one phaser one, then one ad rack. Then it'd be really close to the weaponry of a Klingon D7.
Does the Black Sharks have any drone racks other than the option mounts?
Yes, they do. They come with two. That's why putting two in the option mounts, one on each option mount, at that point, it's called the Kazini configuration.
Yeah. If you put one T1 and one ADD, which isn't a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
That's full Klingon.
Right. Of course, the thing with the Black Shark is, unlike the Orion, you have no option. You choose it at the beginning of the tournament, and that's it.
Right.
So
now is that I forget. Now the Oxbox has two configurations for the tournament.
Nope, has one configuration for the whole tournament. The only one that you get to choose the configuration is the Orion. But of course, when we talk about the auxiliary battle cruiser, that has four option mounts, and so it gives you quite a bit more options. Now, the one thing about the auxiliary battle cruiser that is kind of interesting is that all most of the phasers, all except for the one, I think, rear extended phaser 3, if I recall correctly.
They're all 360.
They're all 360. That's exactly what I was getting to.
Yeah.
So even though you have the most suckiest turn mode of all of the tournament cruisers, i.e. D, just like the Gorn, it and one thing you will you might try, but you're taking your life in your hands from the beginning is trying to het in that thing. Because it has a breakdown of 3-6. That means even with the plus 2 modifier on your first het, you've got a 1/3 chance of breaking down on that first het.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're successful, you're going to surprise the heck out of your opponent. But if you're not successful, you're dead.
Right.
You know, but of course, there are certain situations where that is the case. I actually had a situation where I was playing the Andromedan against the auxiliary battlecruiser, and what I did was something interesting. And I think after I completed it, this is what I did, is I came running right in at him, got to like range 3, hit him, did a diz dev over him, behind him. So he had only, he figured he only had one option, which was to het. To chase, right. Chase me down, because otherwise he could not recover from that initial battle pass. Because he felt like he really needed to get to my rear panels. And of course he failed, big surprise.
And right.
1/3 is still 1 in 3. So, yeah. As I said, it's a rare thing indeed that you ever hit in that thing.
Right. Now, well, if he failed that one, he was basically toast at that point.
Oh yeah.
Because not only that, but he didn't stop moving.
Right, he stops, moves, you get additional internals, and 10% of your work boxes are gone.
Yes.
Yeah, so.
And your turn mode and your het chance goes down.
Yeah, oh yeah.
But here's the problem. Yeah.
Continue.
Biggest problem is that his speed was set to 0. And what's the Excel of a wind box?
Oh yeah. it's really hard to get that thing going again. Which is why you normally are flying around the board pretty fast, because you want to keep your speed up. To keep up your maneuverability, because when you slow down, you know, you have a limit to how much acceleration you can have, more limit than most people.
Right. And that gave the Andromedan plenty of time to slow down, recharge batteries, and make another good pass.
Mm-hmm. Which is why he decided to head at that point. Now,
right. When he failed to head, I think that's pretty much game over. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. The thing is, most ships, that if you break down flying that ship, it's pretty much game over.
Yeah.
But as I mentioned, the big thing about the auxiliary battlecruiser is that for the auxiliary battlecruiser, that first het is not even guaranteed. All the rest of the ships out there, that first het is guaranteed.
Yes.
And of course, the Orion, he has two guarantees.
And after that, his head chance is really good.
Oh, yeah. Just like the Andromedan. Andromedan is a breakdown of 6.
Right, but he only gets 1 free.
Yep. But hey, so no one wants to do a Burnside maneuver.
What's that?
No one wants to do a Burnside maneuver.
Was that the one where he kept sailing on the hat?
Burnside maneuver is, in the Andromeda, is real simple. You go in, you try to displace away, you fail to displace. After you fail to displace, the only way to get out of there is to then hit. And then you, when you hit, you fail to hit. That's called the Burnside maneuver. Made famous by the ever so famous player of Ken Burnside.
Yes.
I'm not sure what. I'm assuming he did it at Origins, would be my guess.
That would be probable, since it was very famous. If he had done it at a game in somebody's house, I don't think anybody would know about it to this day.
Oh, agreed. Now, as is, when it comes to that auxiliary battle cruiser, one thing about that, of course, is that it's got four option racks. Sorry, option mounts, sorry. Now, you would think you would just select it like you would select the Orion. No, you do not. Because, of course, you have the big issue that it has, you cannot double the warp. And also, you have one package to choose. I'm willing to bet you that if the Orion only had one package to choose, you know, that would definitely change the selection of what goes in the option mounts.
If you only had one, you needed to have a wider variety in the option mounts.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You would never see a phaser boat Orion.
Right. Because there's certain ships that just can't be.
Oh, agreed. And that's why you would never see it. But fortunately, the Orion does not have that issue. Now, there's a couple I can't remember all the packages that some of them have special names for them.
Well, there is one package that one person liked to play against me, and I have never been able to beat that package.
And what's that?
And he called it Dr. Octopus.
Oh, Doc Ock. Oh, that one? Where basically you fill it with drone racks?
I could never beat it. Eight drone racks total.
Yeah, I know. Dang.
I found that unbeatable.
Wow.
What he would do is he would come in and fractured me. And then, he already had, gazillion. He would basically corner. He would go into the corner on turn one, launch four drones. Then on turn two, he'd start off by launching two more drones, run in, fracture me, and after the drones were gone, launched six more, and when they were gone, launched two suicide shuttles. So you were dealing with 14, was it? Eight and four, 12, 14 seeking weapons in one turn. How do you stop that?
Oh. Well, the only way to stop that is don't get tractored.
How do you prevent, if he comes in on a reciprocal course, there's almost no way to avoid him. He will run you down at one point. He's always got power in his tractor and speed. So he's moving speed 31. He's faster than you or as fast as you. He doesn't have to turn. All he has to do is get to range 2, maybe 1, and then track to you. And then it's game over.
True. But I would think like an Orion or possibly an Andromeda, where the maneuverability comes into play greatly. I would think
It wasn't enough. I could, even with a highly maneuverable ship, couldn't get away from it. I made a mistake once. It was pretty funny. It was almost a Ken Burnside maneuver. I took a hydrant, and I waited too long to launch my fighters, and he grabbed me in the tractor.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't launch my fighters. It's like, crap.
Oh, yeah, geez. Because the tractors, you're the hydrant, you cannot launch your fighters. You only can launch, like, suicide shuttles directly at that person who has got you tractored.
Well,
it wasn't enough. Dang. Yeah, there's the other one.
That was pretty ugly.
Mm-hmm. The one kit that I always found a kind of fascinating one is called the Bubble Pig. Ever heard of that?
The ESG.
Yeah, the center mounts in the front are ESGs.
Yeah.
And the two sides are plasma Fs.
Mm-hmm. ESG only takes up one slot.
No, it takes up both slots.
Or two.
Takes both
so
up.
So you only have one. You have one ESG.
One ESG that takes up two slots.
It's kind of weak.
Oh, I didn't say it wasn't weak. I just found the ship fascinating.
Yeah. Well, if you put a pair of photons in those front mounts, they have much better damage output.
But you have to remember, you have to have two local mounts used. Two mounts used for local weapons. And that's what the ESG does.
Say again?
In the aux box, you need to have two of those need to be local. Local weapons. They have to be like, and they can be an ESG. They can be a drone rack. It can be a phaser. It can be a disruptor. It can be an ad rack.
Mm-hmm.
But it has to be one of those that's considered a local weapon. That's why you couldn't have two plasma Fs and two photons.
Oh, I didn't know about that rule.
Yep. You have.
Say this one again. Oh, so the ones in the center have to be. Say this rule again.
The rule is, of the four option mounts, two of those option mounts must be taken by local weapons.
What do you mean by a local weapon?
Local to the winds. Those are disruptors, drones, phasers, ad racks, or ESGs. Those are considered local to that area.
Oh. So, okay. That's why I use the ESGs.
Obviously, you can replace ESGs with disruptors.
Yeah.
But the point of having an ESG is that it's a capacitor weapon. So
yeah.
That you charge it, and after it's charged, you don't have to put a single point of energy into it. For the initial battle
right.
pass. So you can tractor a person and you can still have quite a bit of protection.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, since the plasma Fs also are zero holding.
That's a fast, it's like a phaser boat.
Yep. Now I remember.
Of course, you're now mixing. Drones and ESGs. That's a fun concept.
Yeah, I think there was
four drone racks with the ESCs.
Hmm. If I recall correctly, there was one which was like Disruptor, Hellbore, Drone Rack, and a Phaser G?
Yeah.
There was some monstrosity where it was like one of each weapon.
Mm-hmm.
So, let's get back to tactics on these ships. Obviously, the one thing about the battle cruiser is that the battle cruiser is going to, for the most part, unless you're going in for the kill, you need to be moving always and try to keep your speed up above speed 15.
Yeah. Yeah, I think your max excel is 10.
Right.
So 15 may not be enough.
True. So, you know,
other ships can accelerate by 15.
Right.
Not the aux box.
That's true.
Yeah.
So you might want to stay above 20. So if you want, so or you can max out your speed.
Or 21.
Mm-hmm. Well, in my mind, 21
is actually a good number since the 2/3 mover.
Right. But there's always gotcha for the 2/3 arm, the 2/3 mover is that to get that last point of speed to go from 30 to 31 costs you a full point of power.
Correct.
So it's,
but you can't get to 31 without being at least 21 on the turn before.
Oh, I agree there. But the only reason, the only thing I'm pointing out is that 31 yes. isn't always necessary.
Right.
Remember, you're running around in a fishbowl.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think that one impulse is going to make that big of a difference in the long run. Obviously, tactically,
now,
in that
there is one place where it does make a difference, and that is it helps with the order of precedence. If you're going 31.
Right.
Anybody going 30?
But at the same time, Barry, anyone else who's going 31 is going to be ahead of you.
Yeah, that's true.
The only person that will not be is going to be. Actually, there's two ships. There's the Stealthorian and there's the Gorn. Those both have turn mode of B, a D.
Yes.
So.
Right.
And when you get close to a person, yes, that matters. When you're farther away, it doesn't really matter that much.
Correct.
Now, so you need to keep your speed up because if you stop, you're dead. Not really. No, you're not quite dead, but you have a harder time to get going again.
Oh, it takes forever. Yeah, because you have, what, turn one, your speed 5. Turn two, your speed 10. Turn three, your speed 20. Most ships can get to 20 in 2 turns. That ship takes 3 turns to get to 20.
Yep. Which is why basically...
And 20 is not even super fast.
True, but the big thing when it comes to speed, it's less of... Which is... the big thing about the game is that sometimes it's not as much about speed... As long as you have position.
Yeah.
Because early in the game, when you're first starting out, you want speed because you want to achieve that position. And what's the position you want to achieve? You want to achieve the center of the board. Because if you can maintain the center of the board, you can go at a slower rate of speed if your opponent doesn't want to actually engage. Because if the opponent doesn't, if your opponent does not want to engage, what they've got to do is they have to run around the outside of the board. Running around the outside of the board requires them to go at a high rate of speed, higher than you're going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I've played that game. It's crazy. Now, obviously, the one thing also about the auxiliary battlecruiser is that it's got those 360 phasers. So it doesn't matter what shield is facing your opponent. You can fire your maximum number of phasers. Now, the maximum number of phasers, well, not quite max.
It's tiny.
The rear arc has one extra phaser, three. But.
Yeah, so it's what, 4P1s and 3P3s total?
Right.
That's not much. That is still phaser light. The only redeeming factor is the fact that it's got four drone racks.
Right.
And the four option mounts. But if you put, say, four disruptors in it, a Zen would still have more phase. Well, let's see. A Zen would have the same number of P1s, but it would have five more P3s. And extra option, drone option points, and the scatter pack.
Yep. And of course, your drone racks can go out, and are also not arc specific.
Yeah, drone racks don't have arcs. But yeah, the aux box is very anemic when it comes to phasers. I think it has less. Does the Orion have less intrinsic phasers than the? I don't know. How many phasers do Orion?
The Orion has what? Let me double check. It has six phaser threes.
Okay, and how many P1s?
It has four P1s.
So even the Orion has more phasers.
Yep.
I mean, the Romulan has more phasers. I think the Auxbox has less phasers than any other ship in the game.
Yep, correct.
And that is a staggering weakness.
True.
But then again,
but at the same time,
as I've said, I've never.
Yeah. What I was going to say is that at the same time, when it comes to the phasers are 360 degree, especially the phaser ones. Now,
yes.
Now I've said something to be said to have more phasers, even if they're out of arc. But.
Right. Well, first of all, it gives you padding.
Right.
And second of all, you do have the ability to possibly use them all.
Agreed. Because one thing I was thinking
again,
about.
I've never beat Doc Ock.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to.
Oh, understood. Yeah, because I was thinking about the Gorn. The Gorn basically has either three or four phasers facing any one direction. There's only a few directions, i.e. like center line directly forward or center line directly aft that you actually get six phaser ones.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're dealing with either four or three.
Never three.
Mm-hmm.
Is it three?
No, actually, you're right. It's always four. Because the they're like
sometimes
the, because the rear rear arc, right rear arc, left front arc right, front arc left, and then the left side and right side phasers.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's always, well, yeah, it's always four.
It's always four.
Which is basically the same thing as the auxiliary battle cruiser. As I said, except for those.
Except if the auxiliary battle cruiser loses a phaser, which happens.
Right.
It can't turn the facing and get it back. The Gorn can.
Right.
Next, the Gorn can lose all four phasers and then turn to another facing and still have four phasers.
Not quite. Because I remember of those four phasers, you're talking about forward arc, left, you know, the forward arc or the rear arc. And those, you know, if you lose right. both of those, you've got blind spots where you only have three phasers.
Oh, you definitely would have blind spots. I'm not saying that. But I am saying that the Gorn could lose four phasers and turn to the point where it has four phasers once again.
Yes. And I agree that the number of phasers can cause issues. But at the same time, the limited number of phaser ones really doesn't seem to be causing the Zinni much issue.
Mm.
You know? Has a lot more phaser threes. Obviously, the Zinni is designed more for a knife fighting approach because of all the phaser threes. So, you know, offensively, you know, the battle cruiser is around the same as the Zinni, but of course, minus the scatter pack. That's one thing that the Zinni has that the Wind does not. The Wind battle cruiser.
Yeah.
So.
And double fire control.
And double fire control. Agreed.
Although that double fire control can get you into big trouble.
Well, yeah, you have when it comes to the Zinni, you have to be judicious on how many seeking weapons you put on the board at any time.
Yeah.
Because if it gets to the point where you're using double fire control, Wild Weasel becomes a lot more of an option for people.
Oh, yeah. You've got 10 drones on the board, Weasel.
Right. Agreed, but at the same time, you want to... I feel like you should avoid Wild Weaseling as much as possible. But, you know...
Well, yeah.
That depends upon the ship and the situation, because I know whenever I play a Saltorian, I'm thinking back and forth between whether I'm going to be using Wild Weasel for this game or I'm just going to rely purely on speed.
Right.
Obviously, if I need more power, Wild Weasel. If I need less power for weapons, that is, you know, I don't plan on, I need to overload like every single turn. Then, if I don't have to overload every single turn, then I can use the power towards speed.
Right. Yeah, Self has trouble holding weapons too. Or at least the particle cannons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the funny thing about the auxiliary battle cruiser is obviously you have to be judicious in your weapons because of unlike the Orion, you can't double your warp, so you can make up for the heavier weapons like Hellbores.
Right.
You would rarely want to have two Hellbores in your ship.
Because
In theory you can have two Hellbores and two disruptors and you'd be fine when it comes to following the rules. But the problem there is that the amount of power that's going to be required to have them overloaded. For that turn that's overloaded, that is 20 points of power if you want to overload both of them. I mean, all four weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And you got, what, 24 plus 10 is 34 plus 3 is 37. 37 total points of power. And if you have 20 of it, you're not moving very fast. That's why, in that case, you have to be pretty much stopped. And this is going to be the coup de grace.
Can you put particle cannons in a wind box?
No.
No.
It's considered an extraterrestrial technology like the Tholian webcasters.
Yeah.
So, it is what it is.
Right.
Now, going back to the Black Shark, obviously those limited option mounts all depends on what kind of ship you like to fly. Do you like it more on the direct fire side or more on the seeking weapon side?
Mm-hmm.
And as I said at the beginning, you know, the Black Shark is a great overall medium ship. So it all comes down to what do you feel comfortable with? Would you like to be having drones always going after your opponents and therefore not coming towards you? Or are you more aggressive and want to come in close and just direct fire and beat the crap out of your opponent that way?
Right.
So, as I said, it depends on what kind of captain you are, which I truly feel like each player has a certain mindset that works best with their personality. So each ship kind of reflects the personality of that captain. Now, obviously, there's some players that are really good at overall tactics and overall, you know, so they can select any ship and they can play well in it.
Yeah.
I'm not one of those people. I can play okay. I can possibly win, assuming my opponent makes a mistake. But overall, you know, some of my favorite ships are like the Seltorian and the Andromedan, you know.
Gee, imagine that.
Can't imagine that.
Hey, I hate to say this, but I have like a really early wake up tomorrow morning.
Okay. Well, Barry, you have a good night.
You too.
Okay, bye-bye. Okay, well, let Barry go on that. Finish discussing, almost finished the wins. I'm going to wrap it up here when it comes to the win tactics, tournament tactics discussion. Obviously, the win, Exilio Battlecruiser gives you a load of possibilities when it comes to weaponry. But those have to be, if you really think about your firing arcs. Because the firing arcs are going to be limited. And unlike most ships, you won't be able to maneuver nearly as much as you could in the other ships. So, you know, the whole right side, left side thing, that gets problematic for direct fire weapons. That's why, you know, putting drone racks are good. And as Barry pointed out, the whole dock, you know, the Doc Ock, you know, where you had 8 drone racks, which is, I'll be honest, the only time I've ever seen that is, was it Doc and Bandy, the Bandy brothers. Yeah, Lee Bandy and his brother who was a doctor. Those were the top win guys. Obviously, if you've been around tournament play long enough, Steve McCann also plays the win, has played the win a lot. Later years, he stopped playing the win. I think he played the ISC mainly. And then, of course, we had Peter Bakia, who for the longest period of time, he played the Zinni. So much so that he's got this special set of counters. And you can tell he's played these counters for years. And he always kept them in this one special bag. And so when he started playing Gorn, he had like brand new counters. Always, every single time I saw Peter playing the Gorn, I always thought that was kind of weird until I got used to it. Okay, the Gorn is his new ship. It's still heavily a seeking weapon, but obviously it's going to require a little more power management because your weapons are taking power versus the Zinni, where your drones don't take power. Obviously, your disruptors still take power, but when it comes to the drone ships give you a lot more flexibility when it comes to using your seeking weapons as terrain, and also when you're going to be putting your energy towards your other weapons. So drones as mobile terrain is a heck of a lot easier when it comes to versus plasma. Plasma inherently are limited in time, the length of time they're actually on the board, compared to drones. Drones last for 3 turns, so you can have this constant mobile terrain until your opponent decides to actually knock them down. In which case, that's what you want, because it's going to waste his energy. And also in the cases when you're going in for a battle pass, he won't have those weapons available to fire at you. Given how late it is, what I'm going to do is I'm going to put off discussing the new Sapphire Star tournament until next week. And that will be the main topic for the evening. So with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.